All right, another week of the LCFP, and it's round two to have Grant Koppel on the pod. Let's go, G-Cop. Rivalry week was crazy, dude. And we were talking before about some players in more so professional sports that switched teams from one rival to another. I know Johnny Damon came up, a couple other names. Rivalries should matter, man. We can't take these things lightly. Your boy Pat Kane now. What's up with that?
We can't. Laner, thanks for having me on again. It's always a pleasure. This is by far my favorite podcast to hop on, and the only one I hop on, but it's my favorite. yeah, it's news to me. I just found this out as we were chatting that Pat Kane is no longer a Hog. He's no longer a Ranger now, and he's with our longtime rival, the Red Wings. But yeah, we were talking a little bit about how it's interesting. I feel like the NHL and some other sports, it's more common to switch from to your main rival, where you don't see it as much in some sports like the NFL. Like, you just don't see many players switching from the Bears to the Packers. But it's going to get interesting, I think, especially to bring it into this podcast when that starts happening more on college football lines. Like, what's going to be the first Alabama starter or just, you know, significant player to go to Auburn?
Right.
Or even LSU. I mean, yeah. You know, guys are going to bounce around the SEC, but I think especially when you see like a Michigan, Ohio State guy jump, you know, I don't know if will happen, but it's bound to happen at some point. Obviously there's tons of guys who've already hit the portal, but a couple pretty big pieces looked like hit the portal for Auburn after that Iron Bowl loss. So
yeah, it is going to be interesting. I mean, like Jermaine Burton went from Georgia to Alabama. But that's not like they're not like longtime rivals. They're just playing a lot lately because of the SEC championships. But you're right, dude. If a Michigan player jumps to Ohio State or like an Alabama player jumps to Auburn, like that could be madness, dude. Like right now, guys are leaving.
I want to see a backup quarterback leave the start at the rival. I want to see like a Jalen Hurts, you know, or like a or wait, I'm not thinking of that right. Who transferred underneath to?
Yeah, Tua took Jalen's job, but then Jalen transferred.
Yeah, Jalen went to Oklahoma. Yeah. So if like Jalen would have went to like Auburn and beat him.
Be nuts.
Something like that. That's got to happen in time, that's going to be a good story.
That would be for sure. It'd be like Quinn Ewers, instead of him going to Texas, he went to Michigan. Like, oh, dude, stuff like that would be madness. But so any big takeaways from rivalry weekend? I mean, that was madness.
I mean, it's just... I feel like it's more of the same. Alabama finds a way to beat Auburn. It's a close game. It's always close at Auburn. But, I mean, as much as Auburn was in the driver's seat, I just couldn't – you just can't rule out Alabama. I'm like, there's no way they pull this off. They're going to find a way. It's 4th-and-31, and I feel like it's a 50-50 shot. Maybe I was the only one to think that, but I was just like – I watched, you know, Nebraska blow it so many times that I felt like Auburn could find a way to do it too. Or I was watching the game with my wife and trying to get her into football and like, look how exciting this is. And she literally is watching probably the best game of the year so far in that Iron Bowl. It's my personal opinion, but I was like, Chloe, watch this. They're going to get like a PI call, like a pass interference call. I'm teaching her. I was like, watch, they're going to try to, someone's going to fall in the end zone. Like that's how I actually saw some kind of flop on Auburn happening. And then they rush two guys and you know, the quarterback's dropped back for like, it seems like an eternity. I'm like, what is going on? You know, he's back in the pocket for like a minute. And I'm like, is the TV frozen or is he just surveying the field for minutes?
Yeah.
And finds the guy in the back of the end zone touchdown. She looked at me and she's like, what, is that crazy? I was like, one play, 31 yards. Like, it's unbelievable. But
hey, you're trying, man. Props to you for trying.
I know. It's just like it's falling on deaf ears time and time again. So
that's funny. Dude, how about Michigan, Ohio State? I thought Ohio State was going to win that. Bad look for Ryan Day, huh?
Yeah, I thought the game lived up to the hype. It was a fun game. Unfortunately, I missed the first half, so I saw the second half of the third quarter and then the fourth quarter. And you got the feeling that Ohio State was going to do it again, like the Notre Dame game, especially how they started that last drive.
Mm-hmm.
They're moving it quick. I was actually disappointed in Marvin Harrison Jr. He's the best athlete on the field, and he just seemed like he
wasn't a factor.
He ended up with over 100 yards receiving, but it was some of it was in that last possession where it was just like in a prevent defense, and it was like a 20, that was like 30 yards of it, I feel. But it's just like you have these recruits at wide receiver, and I just don't feel like they're being utilized. Like, I don't know, run him in like an end around or something, get him the ball in open space. He's probably the fastest, strongest player on the team, you know, and on the field. So early on, he had a couple catches, and I thought he was going to be like a big, like, okay, they're just going to feed him. But
For sure.
I just feel like, I don't know, I felt like he wasn't used. So
Yeah. And I got
I
to
don't
give
know.
Michigan a lot of credit. I've been hard on them with everything, and as we should be. I think the media is kind of giving them a pass a little bit, but man, dude, give them credit. Like this year they won straight up. There was nothing going on. I think Kyle McCord was the difference. I don't think he's elite.
He's bad. He's
Yeah.
they need a dual threat quarterback. Like, I just think they need
Yeah.
someone who can move a little bit more. If he could run a little bit better, I don't know.
Yeah.
He's not great, but
And this Michigan team is good, I think. I think they're really
they
good.
are.
Their
They're the
roster, this is the best version of Michigan we've seen.
it's like the classic, like they're just so much bigger and physical up front than Ohio State. Like, Ohio State has the athletes. They're a more athletic team. They're probably a more talented team, like offensively, than Michigan is too.
Yeah.
But Michigan wears you down with that O line. And honestly, but to give Ohio State credit, they didn't get worn down. Like, it wasn't like the last two that Michigan beat them, where it just seemed like Ohio
They
State didn't
broke their
have to
will.
get. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. That didn't happen in this game, which I actually thought was going to happen. I thought Michigan was going to beat them by more than they did. I felt confident
Wow.
that Michigan was going to win the game. I thought they were the best team. I think I mean, they're right there up with Georgia, I think, for the top of college football this year. But yeah, I mean, it kind of it dismisses the sign stealing. But
Yeah.
I think the number one thing to still knock Michigan on is, you know, you can't make the excuse for the signs, I don't think, anymore. I do think it's, I mean, you know how I feel about Michigan, that listened to the first time I
Yeah.
was on this podcast,
We
and you
both,
kind
yeah.
of like,
We're on
but
the
I
same
still think
page.
it's legit, but I don't think that you can make the excuse. They're a good football team. Like, that's not an
Right.
excuse for them winning the games that they won. The biggest knock, I still think, is the strength of schedule at the beginning of the year, which you can knock a handful of teams for.
Definitely Georgia
But
as well.
you play, if Michigan obviously played no one all year but Ohio State, but I think Michigan early could have lost to a lot of teams. So.
So there's two sides, Grant. There's two sides. There's one side that's like, hey, this is like one of the greatest years ever for a four-team playoff. And then there's another side that's like, dude, if this was 12 teams, this would be a really good year for it. And here's why. The four teams that are in right now are all undefeated. So they all have a chance. Like they all have to play a conference championship game. I can trash Iowa, I can trash Louisville, I can trash Oklahoma State, whatever. You still got to win a team that's a 1, 2, or 3 loss team in your conference at a neutral site to get in. So that's exciting, right? We could see all four teams win. They're in, no questions asked. We could see chaos, or you could go, the 12-team playoff would be awesome this year. Like it, there's 8 teams I feel like that are really legit that could win the national title this year. Like the top 8 teams. I know Michigan beat Ohio State, but that was a close game. Georgia's Georgia. Oregon and Washington, like they're, if Oregon wins, then it's 1-1. So put them both in there. Let's see what they can do. Alabama, Texas. But the crazy thing is, Grant, is like all these teams have pretty much beat each other. So it's got to be the hardest year ever for the committee to pick four teams, right?
I think it's the latter. Like, I just think it's so much better to have more teams in this year. I don't see the argument. I get the argument of there being four undefeated teams, but I think the better teams, I think some of the teams not getting in are better than, I think they're all better than, like, six of them are better than Florida State without Jordan Travis. Like, I
Yeah.
would rather see Bama get in, because this is how I view it. I don't think, like, Alabama could be, what's the line on that game? The Alabama Georgia SEC
That's
Championship.
they've got Georgia by 6 in that one.
Okay, there's not many teams that can beat Georgia and Michigan this year. I think Michigan can maybe be beat by like some of these Pac-12 teams, maybe by Washington and Oregon on a given night. You give them, I think maybe they play 10 times, they can beat them 2 to 4 times. Like, they can, I think Michigan's better than those teams. Georgia, it's going to be hard to have a non outside of Ohio State, Michigan, and some SEC schools, I don't think those Pac-12 teams can beat Georgia. It's just a different style of football, and they're too small up front. Like,
Yeah.
that's why I want to see more teams in it, because I think it gives the having teams from outs. I just think it doesn't give the opportunity for the top tier to get beat as
Yeah.
easily. Like, does that make sense? I think they can. I think
Totally.
like Georgia dominates over some of these other conferences more than they do against, like, you know, if they don't play well on a given night against LSU, they could lose because it's a similar brand of football. If their athletes don't show up, if the rhythm's off and the timing isn't right in their pass game or something, like, they can lose on any given night to a good SEC school. I think the game is just different when I think they're not going to lose to a Pac-12. I don't think they're going to lose to Oregon or Washington.
I
That's, I don't know.
agree.
That's how I view it. Maybe
Yeah,
I'm completely wrong, because I didn't think I thought TCU beating Michigan last year, and honestly, that Michigan team was nowhere near as good as they are this year.
I
But I was
agree.
really, really surprised that TCU beat them. Like,
Yeah, you're
I didn't
right.
think the 3-3-5 defense was going to work. Well, it didn't. I guess they ran up the score on them. But I guess Michigan just couldn't stop TCU, which was
Which was
shocking.
shocking. Yes.
Shocking to me that I still think if they played 10 times, that was the one time that TCU would beat them, but it
But then, to
happened.
your point, then that Georgia TCU game would be hypothetically a second round game. And then it would kind of be like, okay, TCU had
Yes.
their magical win. Now we all realize Georgia put them in their place. They're not for real.
Yes.
And then it's like maybe Georgia's got Ohio State waiting for them, or Texas, or Oregon, or Alabama. Like, I agree with you. I want to see these top eight teams play it out this year. And as many of
Right.
those matchups as possible would be really exciting for fans, I think.
Totally.
Plus, man, you're going to get to see some home games for teams. Like, where it stands right now, top four would have a bye, but then 5 through 8 would have home games.
Dude,
So then
imagine these
whoever
teams
ends up at
going to
9 through 12,
north.
oh
Yeah,
gosh, dude, could you
imagine these
imagine?
games
Well,
in
think
the
about the home
snow.
crowds, dude. Like,
Oh yeah.
okay, NFL teams, they're all pretty much in big cities. But these college towns, dude, imagine what that does for these fan bases, for the local economies. Like,
Well,
that's just madness, dude. Like, that's
okay,
going to be sick.
an interesting thing on that though is what's going on with the students for Christmas break? Are they going to be around school for these games?
True. True.
Because the games are going to be played, I guess they'd be played the second week. Is there
Would
a
they play
break
them
between the
immediately
championships and
after?
the,
I don't
yeah,
know.
maybe they'd put, or it's during like their dead week. Not to get all academic on, you know, but like what's going on at
It could
school
be
those
during
weeks?
finals week, dude. Yeah.
But people would still show out. I mean, come
Yeah,
on. None
people
of
would
these
show
schools
up.
actually, it'd be like Taylor and Silent Night. You know, it's like
Yeah.
that'll be your study break is going to the playoff game. But
Absolutely.
okay, Josh, I've got a hypothetical for you. So if the
Yeah, come on.
three, if every team beside, if the three undefeated teams in the top four right now go win their respective conference championship and Georgia loses to Alabama, who's in?
Oh my gosh, dude. This is like the hardest question. Here's my thing. Obviously, I'm an Alabama fan, so I'm gonna take off my fan hat for a second here.
Yeah.
I think, like you said, Georgia hurt themselves by not scheduling any tougher non-conference opponents early in the year, right? Like,
Yep.
if they had a non-conference
They played
win
Ball
early in the
State,
year,
Josh.
right? Like,
Come on. Come on. What is that?
if they played Oregon again, like last year they played Oregon week one and beat them 56-7.
Didn't
Same
you say they were
quarterback,
trying to,
same
weren't they trying
coach.
to play somebody though that got, weren't they trying to play Texas or Tennessee or something?
It was Oklahoma and Georgia, and they canceled. Now, whose decision that was, I don't know, but it's because they're on the schedule next year as conference opponents. But then, like you said, you can't just bounce Oklahoma and then play a Ball State type team. Like, that's just, to me, I would say Alabama. I
Alabama's
at
in.
first was saying Georgia would still be in. Depend like if it's a really close game, like if it's like Alabama hits a walk-off kick or something, right? Or goes for two to win it at the end, I would say Georgia should still be in. And
See,
then
that's crap. Like, they should
it's
both be
not.
in, and Florida State should be out, though.
You're
Florida
right.
State should
It's
be out.
not a good
But,
take.
yeah.
Georgia shouldn't be in. They shouldn't be. I would say Alabama. And to me, people are going to say, well, Texas head to head over Alabama. And to that, I say, no one has beat Georgia in the last 3 years. So, like, that's the trump card. If you beat Georgia, you've got to be in, right?
Yeah. And you have one loss, and it's to Texas, who's
and it's a week two loss, Grant. That's got to matter, right?
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm a huge advocate for early losses matter less. They do. The team develops. It's like, you. It's amazing that, like, I was just looking, LSU, like, I don't even know why I'm talking about this, but LSU, like, they should have lost to they won 34-31 against some absolute trash team. They should have four losses right now. But you just, early on in the season, there's teams that just escape games. I mean, wasn't Michigan, Michigan was playing Bowling Green, and I think they were, like, tied at halftime in week
two.
Okay, so you tell me if Michigan's playing, like, you know, even like a middle of the road team, if they're playing like a, let's say they're playing, I don't know.
What, like a Kentucky or a Louisville?
Yeah, like a Kentucky or Louisville, like a tier two SEC school.
Yeah.
They'd probably be down by two scores going into half. That's a different out, you know, like playing that bad against a non-power five school that's a bottom tier MAC team, and you're basically, maybe they might have been up by a field goal at halftime or something.
Right.
Like, that's you're on the ropes against
you are.
A decent team if you're playing them that early. So you get away with a lot of mistakes early if you're playing like these cupcake games 3 or 4 weeks in.
Absolutely.
You know? And
absolutely.
You're saying Alabama, Texas was week two. It's like these teams are completely transformed later in the season. So
definitely. Definitely. Yeah. It's like on one hand, you can't fault a team too much if they lose big early, but you also have to give credit to another team if they do win and they have, like, you know, the grit to go play a tough team early. Like, why are we rewarding Oregon for playing cupcake teams early and running up the score versus, like, Texas should be over them in the rankings? They decided to go to Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama. Like, right. You got to give them credit for that, in my opinion.
Totally. I agree.
So Grant, one interesting thing that I want to pick your brain on as well here too, is like next year, like a lot of people are saying, like, well, Ohio State, Michigan, this is the last year that the game really matters, is really like a playoff game in and of itself. I disagree with that. One, that's assuming that Ohio State and Michigan are just going to meet each other in the Big Ten championship game every year. I don't think that's going to happen. Could it happen? Is it probable to happen? Yes, I would say. But then let's talk about with the 12-team playoff. They should make some rules. I mentioned earlier kind of how the NFL has division winners and then wild cards or whatever. And we talked about how I think there's going to be some automatic bids for conference winners. Good. That's good. But I do think they still need to refine some of these rules a little bit and then make it a rule where if you play a team twice already, then you have to be on opposite sides of the bracket to meet each other. So if an Ohio State and Michigan play in the regular season, play in the Big Ten championship, there's no way they can play each other in the playoffs unless they both meet in the championship.
Yeah,
like it's not like that hard to make some rules like that, right?
I like it. It's good for everyone. It's good for entertainment. It's good for, it's good all around. I agree. I think Well, hang on. First, before I get into the game between Michigan and Ohio State, did you hear Harbaugh's take on it? Did you hear what he's saying about how it's all fabricated and like the rivalry is heightened by the media and it's not as tense on the sidelines as it's made out to be?
Are you serious?
Really, it was interesting. And I think it was kind of a slap in the face to college football because he's so mad about everything. Like, he's probably just like trying to hurt their, I don't know if he's like after their ratings or what he is, but it obviously is not a good look for college football to be like, this is drama television more than it is reality. But no, I think with like rivalry games and stuff like that, it's always going to matter. It's obviously, it's not going to have like as much. Well, here's the other thing. It could have almost equal as much of like playoff implication. Cause I just think good teams are going to lose more because schedules are going to get harder.
Like, I agree completely.
With all the talent being like put into conference, like, just look at everyone's schedule, looks harder next year. So think about it this way. Ohio State and Michigan might both have one loss, but before they play each other, they both might not be undefeated, and the team, like the winner, you know, and obviously this is all hypothetical, but it could be that loss that puts them out of the playoffs. So it's always going to be heightened. It's always going to have playoff implications potentially,
on the line, you know, even if it's not as cut and dry as like getting in and out of the Big Ten championship. But that'll be another interesting thing on how they, I don't know if, do you know this, Josh, how they're planning to set up the conference championships? Is it just like the two best records? Because
Yeah,
there's no
so there's
divisions
no
anymore.
divisions. So it's
Right.
going to be the two best records, and then head to head could come into play, which is basically what the Big 12 does right now and the Pac. So it's kind of interesting. Like that's why Oklahoma State's playing instead of Oklahoma this year. They head to head beat Oklahoma.
See,
So
that's gonna get frustrating for teams though too in time, because what happens
yeah.
if you've got six two like two loss teams 1 year?
Exactly.
Like
But
if everyone's just stuck up at the top
for
and then it's
sure.
just some random he beat him,
But
like
to your point, college
carousel.
football is going to get more exciting week to week. Like, I think it's a bad take that people are going like, oh, this is the last year that this will matter. We're going to see more good games week to week with the better teams. Like with
Yeah.
the top of the food chain is getting tougher, right? Like a Nebraska next year, dude. Do you know their schedule off the top of your head? Like, I
I know it all.
know
I know them all.
they're adding UCLA, right?
They're playing USC and UCLA next year. They're playing UCLA at home, and it's the last week of October. They play them back to back, and they play USC in LA the week before.
And that's going to
But
be fun, man, because one of the great takes you've had on this pod is like, that's going to be clashing styles of football. Like
oh yeah.
West Coast Pac football versus like Midwest
Especially in
Big
the
Ten football.
especially in the
Oh,
Midwest, you know,
it's going to
like,
be phenomenal, dude. It's going to be
right.
great.
Well, yeah, and you get a hint of that with just the USC Notre Dame game, you know, like
Yes,
I also just
yes.
like I'm curious to see what's going on with USC. Like they fire their defensive coordinator mid-season, like
That's a mess. You
also
wasted Caleb Williams this year. You got worse.
I
Like
know.
you, Lincoln Riley, this has got to be the biggest knock on him. You came into this year with one problem, and your one problem got worse.
Got worse, and it was like it was so bad that it was you could have a bad defense and still win every game this year. You could have a pretty bad defense. You just had a defense that wasn't even existent on the field.
Oh,
Like
my gosh.
give up 35 points a game and you'd be good, but you're giving up 50. Like
Yes. It's kind of like
it's
LSU,
so
Grant.
crazy.
Like
Yeah.
LSU is kind of the same story. Dude,
It's
you
kind of like
like
Iowa. If Iowa had like a
yes, if they had
bad
any
offense,
offense.
and if they had a
Yes.
bad offense, they'd be good, but they have an atrocious offense. So it's
Yes.
like, the fact that they even
I don't know
lost to
if you heard
Minnesota.
me. I think it was a week or two after you were on. I had my brother Johnny on and we were laughing about some guy tweeted out like the funniest tweet ever. It was like if USC's defense wants to feel good, they should scrimmage against Iowa's offense. And if Iowa's offense wants
So
to feel good, they should scrimmage against
funny.
USC's defense.
Dude, that game I would pay some serious money to watch because I
It's
would
gonna
just
be
have no idea
phenomenal.
what to like. What's that? What are they? What do you? What's the over under on points
Oh,
in that
who
game? Is it
knows?
like going to be 20 points a team? Like I don't
Yeah.
know.
Especially these
But
first few years, because we have no concept, no history. We're just going into it blind. Like,
I
who
know.
knows what's gonna happen? It's gonna be
I
fun,
know.
man.
Well, I feel like too, like the bowl games do it a disservice when some of these conferences like intertwine and they play each other at the end of the year. It's like guys are sitting out and it's not the same. You're not really playing for much. Some teams are taking it more seriously. Some guys have half their guys getting ready for the draft. It's just like
Right.
it's not like when it is like week five, like this game matters and it's a conference game. Like it's
Yeah,
completely different. So
you're exactly right. Okay, I wanted to talk too about schedules for next year. I know we've already been talking about it a little bit, but I don't have the full schedule pulled up. I was trying to pull up Michigan's schedule for next year because I had it saved and I just can't find it. But for Alabama next year, they play at Wisconsin early.
okay.
Then they host Georgia early. Like both those games are in September. Then in
Oh, wow.
October, they play at Tennessee. And then in November, they play at LSU and at Oklahoma before the week before the Iron Bowl. Like
That is insane.
you can't tell me that's ex not exciting if you're a college football
I
fan.
mean, they
Like
hypothetically could lose all those games. I mean,
they could.
they're not going to, but that's
Those are a
like
lot of
those are
tests.
oh, that's a lot. Yeah, you got a lot coming.
Oh man, yeah, it's crazy. And what I
Nebraska
think,
schedule is not hard next year. It's, I
really,
mean, we're bad, but
really.
it's, we go like UTEP at home. Our first four games are at home. It's UTEP at home, then it's Colorado because they're trying to reinstate that whole rivalry. So we're playing them like the next 5 years. So we play, which honestly, we'll probably be underdogs in that game, but we'll see how that goes. But so you got So we play UTEP at home, then Colorado, then we play like Illinois, Purdue, Rutgers, and then we play Maryland or something. So you've got like six games right there
it's
that are
very
winnable.
You
and
gotta.
Then
what are
we
you expecting
go
next year?
One.
Like a seven win season? What are
Anything
you
less than
expecting?
7 wins, I'll be depressed. Depressed.
Yeah.
I don't. I'm like 7 wins. I'd be happy. It's just
that's
like
the standard.
We gotta win 7 next year.
Yeah, I agree.
And then it gets harder. Obviously, we go like we play one of two. We play. I don't know if we play. We play Ohio State. We don't play Michigan, and then we play USC, UCLA, and Penn State, I think, or something. So we got some hard ones at the end of the season.
But that's another good example of what we talked about earlier of games early in the year versus late in the year. Colorado is a team that you would have rather played later in the year.
Yeah,
year.
Totally.
Like
they
Nebraska would beat
year.
Colorado if they played tomorrow.
Maybe. I don't know. The offense is just so tough.
Okay, dude. Two interesting things. One, Michigan State takes it's Jonathan Smith, right, from Oregon State, the head coach.
Yeah.
Dude, do you know, like, first of all, this is just crazy, okay? And it just shows you that the landscape is shifting. One, they hired a Pacific Northwest guy. He's only Pacific Northwest. Like, if you look at his whole track record, Pacific Northwest guy. Two, he went 33-34 at Oregon State.
That's crazy. But they're good this
below
year.
500, dude.
Okay. So this is interesting that you say this, because when you asked me today, last second, to jump on the podcast tonight, I was like, I have no idea what's going on in college football right now. My team is down horrendous. We just missed the bowl for 7 years in a row now. And we lost the last four games, including to Michigan State this year, to not make a bowl.
Bad loss. Bad
so,
loss.
So I'm just like down horrendous. My phone has been off. I'm just like, you know, just checked out of college football right now. Like, we come on the podcast. I'm like, yeah, I just don't know what's going on in college football. So I'm like, immediately, I'm like, all right, who's going on? So that's why I know this, like, Fran Brown is, like, coming to Coach Syracuse. I'm, like, all over, like, what's going on with coaches? So I was like, I need some time, because I was trying to catch myself up. I'm in Detroit right now traveling for work, and I'm out to dinner by myself. And I brought my computer to dinner. And I pull up my laptop, and I'm just getting, like, waited on by this waitress at a restaurant with my laptop by myself, and I'm just streaming down college football news.
All for the pod, Grant. We appreciate
all for the
you,
podcast.
Bro.
And I mean, I got nothing else to do on these road trips. but I'm I was reading I read one article about the Michigan State coach, the Oregon State coach going to Michigan. And I don't remember who wrote it or what it was about, but it was home run hire for Michigan State. So this op-ed writer thought it was a great hire. And the point they were making was, I didn't know the Oregon State's coach's overall record was under 500 at 33-34, but they're ranked this year. They were ranked 21st before they just lost this week.
And they've played so, really good teams tight. Like, they almost beat Washington a couple weeks ago.
Even though the pack is not back, and I think it's all overrated, whatever. Now I'm going to flip the other side of the coin and argue from the other side here. But so they're ranked for the first time in a long time, and their recruiting class that he's coaching right now, like the juniors and seniors, are horrid. I don't think they have a 4-star on this recruiting class. So the narrative around this guy is that he's like,
he's
developing players, and he's also pushing talent where it's not there. Like, he's pushing wins out of teams that probably don't have this many wins in them. So that's the story. That was like the excitement about this guy. But that's a big role. I mean, you give it to Mel Tucker, who's been in and out of the NFL and had all the success he had and was crushing it at Michigan State for the first couple of years. And then obviously everything comes out with that guy. And
oof.
I know there's a lot of opinions on that. I've done my homework on that. I won't comment. But but I just think Mel Tucker, splash hire, Oregon State coach. I'm still calling him Oregon State coach. I don't even know his name. So it's just,
exactly.
It's very, it's different. And Michigan State is a sleeping giant. Like, I think they could be great. And they should be able to recruit. I mean, they're for a long time, they were better than Michigan for years. Like,
they were.
A couple of years ago, they were better before the Harbaugh era. So,
I
don't know. It's just interesting. It's interesting. You're right. College football is changing. I'm a little surprised by this hire. I'm surprised they didn't go somewhere else or like take a guy from the NFL or something.
Yep.
Just a bigger name person.
But to your point, Grant, that's what I've heard as well. And it makes sense. They're like, right now, Michigan State, just get this guy. He's not going to cause you any problems. You'd hope, you'd assume.
That's got to be their angle. Their angle is like, yeah, just get a guy who's not going to jail. Yeah.
And honestly, dude, Michigan State might be playing the long game of like, right now, we're not going to out-recruit Ohio State. We're not going to out-recruit Michigan. Maybe we can pull some Pacific Northwest talent and like win recruiting battles there. So I get that. But also, the reality is Harbaugh could be gone next year. And then he can flip that. Depending on who Michigan hires, Michigan State could start winning those recruiting battles again. And like you said, be all of a sudden back as a perennial power. So it's interesting. And then this we have to talk about, because I don't know if you even saw this, but Mark Stoops, the like Texas A&M calls it off at the last minute, dude.
Hang on. I don't know enough about this, but dude, so A&M's got the Duke coach now.
Dude, yes.
Which is a good hire, because that's, I mean, the fact that Duke has done is good. You know what? I'll give a little bit. I give most of the credit to him, but they also got that stud quarterback.
Have
you
seen Riley Leonard?
Duke's quarterback. The guy's like 360 backflip dunking. Like, he's insane athlete.
He's good, dude. Which, yeah, he is, the really word good on him is Notre Dame transfer, potentially.
Oh, that makes me sick. Of course it is. He's such a Notre Dame kind of guy.
He's an academic guy.
Oh, I would just absolutely hate to see that. It's Michigan and Notre Dame for me. They just pain me.
That's hilarious. But no, dude, so A&M, right? They're like, so Kentucky's playing. So this is the other thing you have to think about. So Stoops' agent is probably just balling out right now with A&M. Like, A&M, he's got A&M on the ropes. Stoops is like 6-5 Kentucky team, beating Louisville, you know, upset to knock him out, whatever. After the game, press conference, whatever. And then like a couple people unconfirmed leak, like Stoops is going to A&M. Dude, A&M Twitter goes berserk. They go berserk, dude. They're like, well, we went from 7-4 to 7-4. Like, cause like Stoops, I'll give Stoops credit. He took a bottom tier SEC team and made them middle tier. But like, that's kind of Kentucky's lid. Kentucky's a basketball school. I think that's as high as they're gonna go. So I give him credit.
But
A&M fans are going, well, dude, he's just mediocre. Like, they don't have any 10-win seasons. Like, they're not going to ever play in the SEC championship.
Give so Mark Stoops like, some oil money and see what happens.
Exactly, like, but they're just going berserk. So I think – so A&M at the last minute, dude, says, like, it's off. Dude, well, then what's great, Grant, is that Mark Stoops comes out then, and it's like all this is happening just a couple hours after they upset Louisville. He comes out after, like, all of this is known, and he comes out and tweets, like, I'm so happy to be a Kentucky Wildcat. Like, he's like, the rumors are true that I considered another job, but I'm staying with Kentucky. So it's kind of like,
yeah, and turned down like 3x the payroll, like, to be at Kentucky versus A&M. Funny. That's crazy.
That is ridiculous.
Is he okay? Wait, this remind me. Mark Stoops he's Bob Stoops' brother. Not
yeah, he's
not
related like to Bob Stoops. Yeah.
Are they cousins, brothers? What are they?
Ooh, good question. I'm gonna go with
because I remember
I've always assumed they were brothers. Oklahoma.
Bob Stoops used to
he was a legend
in the Big 12 all the time.
Yeah,
that was painful. But one other thing I was gonna say too, I think a more important trait than ever. Obviously, like, culture building for a head coach has always been big. I think it's bigger than ever because you have to recruit the guys inside your locker room now.
Yes,
like, because if guys aren't gonna be able to keep players, like, retain players every time. So what's really interesting is, like, these programs that are good, but they're not there yet, they're going to struggle keeping, like, the Michigan States. Like, Michigan State deserves to be right up there. But right now, if Michigan State has a breakout player, especially this is taking away, like, the Mel Tucker and the coaching leave. But let's just say they didn't have their head coach leave and they were just where they are.
Just with their record. Yeah,
just with their record. They're going to go leave to go to Michigan or Ohio State. But it's like, how is a team like Michigan State going to ever develop back to where they were and be, like, let's say top tier of the Big Ten again, or just be, like, good again? They have to keep the guys like that are turning around the program, and it's harder than ever to do that. Like, so Nebraska's going to face that challenge. It's like, so, and that's where I feel confident in Matt Rhule. It's like, players want to play for him. So you
long term,
you need coaches that are going to do that too. So maybe that Oregon State guy is going to do that well. But that's where I don't think you had that in Jimbo, and like that's where I question if Deion's got that and stuff. It's like,
yeah, that's a good question.
You can be like an attractive recruiter and have like all the hype and flash around coming to the school, but then how are you going to keep the guys who didn't play the first year or the guys that did well when your team struggled that
right.
first year. Like it's a whole new game now, you know?
Yeah. So. Grant, you may hate this guy. You may love this guy. I don't know. I've never talked to you about him before.
I probably hate him.
Pat McAfee. I probably hate him.
No, I like dude, Pat McAfee.
So McAfee does on Fridays, he does his show live at the school that they're going to do game day at the next day.
Yeah,
right?
I watch it. So yeah, he's always wearing the sleeveless shirts outside. Yeah.
So did you watch the time when they were in Athens and they had Kirby Smart on?
I don't think I've ever fully watched it. I just see clips
dude,
of it.
Dude, Kirby Smart just talked exactly what you talked about. And this is crazy, bro. To me, this is like number one why Georgia is who they are right now. It's like this dude just got this ahead of the curve. He's like, bro, we look at every recruit and he's like, we can pretty much bring in whoever we want. He's like, we rate them on how likely they are to stay if yeah. they don't play in year one. And then we rate them on how likely they are to stay if they don't play in years one and two. And he's like, then we go after those guys. Because right now, we've got dogs at every position. So unless you're like an absolute freak, hardly any dudes are cracking our starting lineup early. So like, we need guys who want to come here, want to be a part of this
and
program,
wait it out.
And want to wait it out. And he's like, that's why we got Carson Beck right now tearing it up. Because he's a dude that sat for 3 years. And
that's
now he's finally getting
cool.
to play. And
that's
I was like,
really
dude, that, if I'm any other college coach in the country, I'm writing that down. And I'm like, yep, that's the
yeah.
formula.
I'm surprised. Yeah, he gave away a little bit of the secret sauce in saying that. But
kind of crazy.
I
anyway.
Was listening to Nebraska's got all these crazy because they got nothing else to do in that state. But they've got this show for recruits who come into town and they put them on a show. And it's
yeah.
really cool. They like try to make them feel like celebrities and stuff. But they have like them come on this high production interview with some of these just beat writers in Lincoln. And they're talking to these twin brothers who had their 4 stars and they hadn't committed anywhere, but they had offers from everywhere pretty much. And I don't know where they ended up going, but they were talking to their Georgia offer and their Georgia official visit. And they were saying how the requirements for like letting the team, like letting Georgia know was the deadline was earlier than all the other teams. Like they have to commit to certain,
really?
Certain teams are like, hey, you know, we're getting our final number in here. We've got 3 spots left in this recruiting class. And Georgia, not even for the sake of needing to know, just said like, hey, if you want to come here, you got to let us know on like on this date, which is way before early signing day or whatever it was. They just said like Georgia's rules were so much stricter on if we wanted to be part of the recruiting class versus like Nebraska. We're sure that like, hey, if we want to come to Nebraska and you guys have already filled for the recruiting class, we're sure you'll just drop some 3 stars or 2 stars and put us on the team as a 4-star. And it was interesting because he's like, it's a whole nother game. Like we can't even keep going on visit. Like we got to just commit to them earlier. And I was like, I didn't even know you could do that, but they're building something different, you know, like out there. It's pretty insane.
4th and 31 will go down in absolute history. Jalen Milroe to Isaiah Bond. My goodness. Nick Saban said it best. There's been a lot of voodoo or magic or whatever that's happened at this place over the years in the Iron Bowl, but it felt like for the first time, it went our way. Boy, oh boy, did it ever. Jalen Milroe delivered an absolute strike to the corner of the end zone to Isaiah Bond for the game-winning play for Alabama in the Iron Bowl. It doesn't get any better than that, people. Rivalry week did not disappoint. Outside of Oregon and Texas blowing out Texas Tech and Oregon State, it felt like rivalry week didn't disappoint at all. Michigan and Ohio State, the game was incredible. It was phenomenal. Very well-played game that came down to the last drive, and the defense for Michigan came up big. The Iron Bowl didn't disappoint at all. Felt there was a lot of missed calls. Probably one of the worst officiated games in this entire season. Just awful, it felt like. But not here to criticize the refs. We got to enjoy a crazy game, that's for sure. And, Kentucky takes down Louisville. And Florida State holds strong in the swamp. Florida State, let me just for a second just kind of blend this intro into some college football playoff reactions. Florida State, stop it with the disrespect to Florida State. I'm tired of it. I've stood up for Jordan Travis all year. I've stood up for Florida State all year. It does not stop here. To me, just because they've got a backup quarterback now doesn't mean that they should be excluded from the playoff. And I hate this stupid debate that's going on right now about the four best teams versus the four teams that deserve to be there. That's why my call right now to the future College Football Playoff Committee is to set the expectations for the 12-team playoff right now. You've got the opportunity. The ball is in your court. And here's what I foresee happening. I foresee rules that have kind of been established a couple years ago and years past being played out next year in an entirely different college football landscape than the rules were created in, being played out in. For example, why are we going to have the top five conference champion winners as automatic bids? Last time I checked, the pack's down to two teams. So why don't we just make it four? Why don't we have rules of, like, this is how you qualify to get into the playoff? This is how many conference champions make it. This is how many at-large bids make it. And here's what's going to qualify for an at-large bid. You heard me earlier talk with Grant Koppel. You could set a couple common sense rules that would just make the playoff a lot more enjoyable and would ensure that we don't see any rematches in the first round or a game happen for the third time until the national championship game. So here's my proposal, okay? Couple rules. Number one, if you have played any team at all, whether it's a conference opponent or a non-conference opponent, you will not be able to rematch them in the first round, okay? And so, for example, let's say Ohio State and Michigan play each other in the regular season, but they don't play each other in the conference championship game. They still cannot play each other in the first round of the playoff. Let's assume that Michigan beat Ohio State and went on to win the conference and received an automatic bid for being a Big Ten conference champion winner. Okay. This also makes it simple. If there's four major conferences and there's four teams with a first-round bye, the four conference winners will get first-round bye. Let's make it easier, not harder. Why would we have five automatic bids, but only four of them are going to get a bye? Again, let's make this easier rather than harder. Let's make it less about debate and more about actually knowing who's going to go there. Okay? Nobody asks questions about, well, who does the NFL committee think is going to get in? And could you imagine when we get to the end of the year? Well, I don't think the Vikings should be in because they don't have Kirk Cousins. Give me a break. A team earns it by wins and losses on the field. But it doesn't just have to be wins and losses versus a different tier of opponents. I've mentioned it before earlier this season, and you should go back and listen for yourself to the episode where I lay out how to make sure that the college football schedules are balanced across all Power 5 teams. You could set up something like an ACC Big Ten Challenge like college basketball does and like they're doing right now as we record this podcast. There are plenty of options that they could do to set up schedules that would be balanced but also maintain the integrity of college football while allowing teams to have two open schedules where they can play a non-Power 5 team to help support them and also have somewhat of a kind of lead up into the year if they want to schedule those early or schedule them late before rivalry weekend. Whatever they want to do, they can have those two games still to help other teams that need the help, and I'm all for that. But we could set up a balanced regular season schedule that makes it fair, and we can also set up rules that have slot it out. There's no teams that are going to be up for debate. We just slot it out. Hey, if you have three or more losses or four or more losses, you're out. What are we going to do about Notre Dame? They don't have a conference championship. If Notre Dame has two or three losses every year, is it just going to be up for debate of, well, should they get in, should they not get in? I mean, I've got questions, and I think that the committee should do a good job right now of answering those questions, getting out ahead of it, so that next year we're not looking at debates. Because right now, if you look at the 12-team playoff and the current setup that they have, you would have Tulane in, assuming that they win their conference championship, which Liberty is right behind Tulane, as well as this non-Power 5 team that would get the automatic bid. So that would be one of those slots as well. But then you have several two-loss teams that are just kind of stacked up, okay? For example, we've got Louisville, who's going to play against FSU for the conference championship. But we also have Ole Miss, Oklahoma, and Penn State just kind of sitting there without a conference championship game to play. But all are two-loss teams. Now is where it gets really gray as well. The committee's going to have to think, do we now hurt teams for getting to play in the conference championship game but losing, for example, in Iowa? They go into this Big Ten Conference Championship game as a two-loss team. But then we all believe, and we'll see what happens. They got to play the game. That's why they play the game. But we assume that they lose to Michigan. Now Iowa's a three-loss team, but Penn State, Oklahoma, and Ole Miss, they didn't have the opportunity to play in a conference championship game. Do we now say, well, Iowa had their shot, so they're out, and we just randomly select another one of those teams that we think has the best resume as a two-loss team? I mean, give me a break. The debates are going to be endless. Now, I love what Grant Koppel said in today's episode. He said, well, at least, and my beautiful wife, Haley, I give her a shout-out as well, has also said this to me as well. Well, at least then, this year, all eight of these teams that we think should have a fair shot to be in the playoff would be in a 12-team playoff format. And that is the moral of the story. These top eight teams that are undoubtedly better than the rest of the country, in my opinion, would all be in a 12-team format, and assuming that there wouldn't be drastic amounts of crazy upsets. Because if it is the conference winner, then Oklahoma State, if they beat Texas, they're in. Iowa, if they beat Michigan, they're in. Louisville, if they beat Florida State, they're in. Right, so you see my point, how there's a lot of chaos, and I just think that the committee would do a great job of getting out ahead of that and slotting out exactly how each team would be able to make it into the playoff. I know that it's kind of fun, and the media thrives off of all this debate, and there should still be debate throughout the year, but I would love it if we had a formula for each team to make the playoff instead of every year giving the benefit of the doubt, and I say this as an Alabama fan, instead of every year giving the benefit of the doubt to these powers at large. I mean, could you imagine if Clemson was a two or three loss team right now? Could you imagine if Ohio State or Alabama or whatnot was a two or three loss team, kind of on the bubble, looking right on the bubble of that 12 seed? I mean, would we just give it to them because they're a team that's been in the playoff in years past? We have to consider all of these things. We have to consider schedules. And one of the things that I mentioned with Grant on this episode that I just really hope you enjoyed, and I think is a good point, is that we're going to see less undefeated teams, I believe. We're going to see less one-loss teams, I believe. There's going to be a lot more competition within conferences, and I think teams will naturally beat each other up. So I do have a problem with assuming that Alabama and Georgia are going to play each other every year in the SEC championship. I do have a problem with assuming that Ohio State and Michigan are going to play each other every year in the Big Ten championship game. I have a problem with that because there are going to be tougher schedules, and it's not a guarantee that we will see those powerhouses matching up with each other every single year in those conference championship games. But if you do think that, and if you do think that these teams are a major step ahead of the rest of the field, then I've got questions. And I've got questions regardless. Why in the world do we still have Oregon as the fifth-ranked team in the country? And why in the world are Kirk Herbstreit and Greg McElroy and all of these guys, I'm not trying to be a hater, I'm not trying to be a negative Nancy, but I mean, we've got to be better. First of all, the committee has got to be better. That's it. I have been saying it for weeks. You've had the opportunity to get it right. You've still kept Oregon at that number five slot, while teams behind them have better resumes, have better wins, have had tougher roads. Oregon just got their first top 25 win this past weekend. And like, we've kept them at five this whole time. I have a problem with that. I have a real problem with that. Not to mention a team like Ohio State that just had their first loss later in the year. They're a good football team. I think everyone knows that Michigan is the better team. They won the game. They earned it. There's no excuses this year. They didn't even have Coach Harbaugh on the sidelines. I think we would all agree, like I said earlier, McCord isn't as talented at the quarterback position. He's got arguably one of the best players in college football at his disposal at wide receiver and one of the best running backs in the country, and he turned the ball over twice, and that's what cost them. And when you play a team like Michigan that has a good defense, that runs the clock down on offense, that runs the ball well, and that controls the clock, you cannot afford to have two turnovers. And like Johnny and I said last week, that was the recipe for Michigan to win. Get a lead early, maintain control of the football, and cause turnovers. It's going to be hard to play Michigan from behind, but Ohio State has the supposedly should have all the tools and the weapons at their disposal to do so. They just don't have a talented enough quarterback, it seems, this year. But at the end of the day, if you really think that Georgia, Alabama, Michigan, and Ohio State are the four best teams in the country, let's create a path for them to do so without a debate. And maybe four teams just isn't quite enough to have in there. So the 12-team playoff should be a blast, and it should allow for all four of those teams to be in the playoff. But again, let's go back to those couple ground rules. Number one, no first-round rematches. And number two, no potential rematches for a third time before the national championship game. So if Georgia and Alabama were to play each other in the regular season, were to play each other in the SEC championship game, we ensure that they are on opposite sides of the bracket to where they cannot meet again for a third time unless it is the national championship game. Everybody wants to see these matchups. I, for one, would love to see an 8-team playoff this year. There are several teams that I just don't know. We can speculate. We can argue. We can say things off of years past. I have my thoughts and opinions and feelings. Grant has his. You watching, you have yours. But we just don't know. And that's why it's we play the game. And that's why it'd be more fun if all of these teams had an opportunity. If Texas wins their conference championship game. If Oregon beats Washington. How do you put Oregon in over Washington? How do you put Oregon in over Texas? How do you put Oregon in over an Ohio State team that didn't get to play in a conference championship? These are the questions that we'll ask, and we just don't know. Of course, it'll be fun, and it'll be chaos, because college football is one of the greatest sports in all of the world. In my opinion, it's my favorite thing to watch. There's chaos, there's opportunities every single week, and Rivalry Week showed us just how insane it was. To wrap up all of my thoughts, I'll give you this. FSU, we're often overlooking him. We're talking, the focus is on Jordan Travis. FSU has maybe, and I would argue, LSU's duo is better, is the best wide receiver duo in the country. But FSU's is right there with him and may be the best wide receiver duo in the country. Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson are absolute weapons. And for us to deprive them of the opportunity to play in the college football playoff after going undefeated and winning their conference championship with their backup quarterback for the last three games of that season, I would not sit well with that. I don't care if he's the backup or not. You got to remember the Ohio State team in 2014. They went not just to their backup, but to their third string quarterback, and they won the national championship. Their road wasn't easy either. They went through Alabama and knocked down the number one seed in the country. So before we assume that FSU is a very weak 4 seed and will get run over by whoever they played, let's look at the facts. They've got some weapons. Their running back had 3 rushing touchdowns last weekend. And Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson are absolute weapons. Let's see what Rotemaker can do. And they've got to earn it as well. They'll still have to beat a good Louisville team, a team that I think is overrated and lost to a middle-tier SEC team in Kentucky. And it's disappointing, to be honest. But a team that they'll still have to beat. It's a 2-loss team to earn their way into the playoffs. One could argue that this year is the craziest and greatest 4-team playoff as we leave. I would, of course, love to see more of these matchups play out, to get to see a Michigan play in Oregon, a Washington play in Ohio State, an Alabama play in FSU would be really fun. We're not going to get to see it this year, and it'll be chaos. And I believe that these 4 undefeated teams, at least one of them will lose, and it's going to be up to the committee to pick who they think the best 1-loss team that is most deserving to be in the playoff. But these 4 undefeated teams going into conference championship week will all get to defend their definitive spot in the top 4. And that is something to be excited about. Y'all enjoy. All right, going into conference championship weekend, there's a lot of people out there that are kind of presenting the question, the chaos question, or giving their take on what they would do if chaos ensues this weekend. And I want to preface this with a wild stat for you guys. All right, no team ranked lower than 6th with 1 week to go has made the playoff. So the precedent is that, well, these top 6 teams are the only teams that actually have a chance to make the playoff. But we haven't seen a year like this year. It's absolute craziness. As I've said, we got 4 undefeated teams that are in the top 4 slots right now. If all of them win, there's literally no chaos, and it's easy for the committee. They can just shut their laptops, mail it in, and there we go, off to go. The only thing that they'd have to worry about is seeding, but I think it'd be pretty clear. Georgia, Michigan, Washington, Florida State. Let's roll them out there and see who wins. But if chaos does ensue, here's my take. All right, let me lay out this chaos scenario for you, okay? And I know there's several different scenarios that could happen, but this is the one we're going to go with, all right? Michigan remains undefeated, beats Iowa. They're 13-0, Big Ten champ. Florida State beats Louisville, takes care of business. They're undefeated. They're 13-0. They will be the only 2 undefeated teams, and I would say the only 2 locks for the playoff. But there are some people out there who still say FSU shouldn't be in. But here, let's go down the rest of the list. Then we would have Alabama at 12-1 as the SEC champion, and Georgia at 12-1 losing to Alabama in the SEC championship game. Then we'd have Oregon at 12-1 as the Pac-12 champion, beating Washington in the rematch. Washington at 12-1, their only loss in the Pac-12 championship to Oregon. Then we'd have Texas at 12-1 as the Big 12 champion, and sitting there at 11-1, not playing in the conference championship, is Ohio State. All right, right off the bat, to me, it's actually easy to eliminate one of these teams, and that would be Ohio State. And I know that you guys know that I actually have a lot of respect for Coach Ryan Day. I have a lot of respect for that program, and I think that there's a lot of talent there. Just with all of the other teams being a part of conference championship games, I would not be able to justify having Ohio State in there. And again, I will hear it. There's a lot of people that are going to have a lot of good arguments. Well, their only loss is on the road at Michigan late in the year, rival. I get it, man. I get it. And if I was an Ohio State man, I would be saying those same things. I'm just telling you that this year, there's a lot of talent, and they don't have a CJ Stroud or a Justin Fields over there that's got that wow factor that I think will play into the committee's mind. I just don't think that McCord is there. And so to me, Ohio State is out. I would also eliminate the Pac in this situation. I know Bo Nix, he's really good. He's had a great year. Dan Lanning, I'm bought in. I think that they're great. And Bo Nix has got more games played than any other player in college football history. And Dan Lanning, I think I'm buying stock on him. I love it. And they got a good team. And I think that they're pretty good at the skill positions. They got some good running backs. Their defense is very good, unlike the rest of the pack. However, they don't do it for me. They went 1-1 against Washington, and they just don't have a convincing enough win to me. Now, maybe they boat race Washington, and it changes my mind. But I just don't see it. They just don't have enough quality big wins to be in this. And again, let me go back to last year. They did schedule a tough team non-conference. They did schedule a tough team early in the year, and they lost 56-7 to Georgia. I tweeted this out, so follow me on X if you'd like. So I guess I X'd it out. That sounds funny to say. But Oregon, when they did schedule a tough non-conference opponent last year, they scheduled Georgia, and they lost 56-7 with the same coach and the same quarterback. Now, that was their first game together, yes, and they... You do judge a team later on, and that's their last year's team. This team's way better, and it's way different. However, they didn't schedule a tough non-conference opponent. And if they did, that would help us out more. Common opponents, they played Texas Tech very tight early in the year. Texas, later in the year, after seemingly trending down, beat Texas Tech very badly this past weekend. So you can't just go on that one common opponents thing, but Oregon's out. Washington's out. Washington played way too many tight games with inferior opponents. And now just because they did that doesn't mean they're out. But that along with this is why they're out. Okay. Alabama is the only team in this situation, in this scenario, to have beaten Georgia in the past 3 years. That's right. Georgia just broke the SEC win streak record with their last win at Georgia Tech. And they beat Georgia Tech. And I know it was tight and I know it was ugly. They did it without their two best weapons. McConkey and Bowers didn't even play that game. And again, it's rivalry weekend. We saw a lot of close games. A sub-500 Washington State team played Washington really tight. A very mediocre Auburn team that lost to Mexico State the week before played Alabama very tight. Had them on the ropes. Rivalry weekend just hits different. A sub-500 Florida team played Florida State tight. And don't even get me started. That was some of the most undisciplined play that I have ever seen. Florida deserved to lose that game, and I picked them to win, and they should have won, and they lost all momentum late in the first half when they forced a turnover or a bad punt, and they did nothing with their drive, a quick three and out, and allowed FSU to score again before the half. They had poor, non-disciplined players, penalties, a guy spitting on the opponent. Florida did not deserve to win that game because they were undisciplined, and if I'm a Florida fan, I would be so mad if Billy Napier was still the coach over there. Okay, so in this situation, Michigan's in, Florida State's in, Alabama's in. It'd be really hard to keep Georgia out depending on the outcome of that game, but I get it. They are in the same boat as Oregon. They didn't schedule a tough non-conference opponent. So I would have Texas in this situation, but Georgia and Oregon would be really close behind, especially depending on the margin of victory for the Alabama-Georgia game, the margin of victory for the Oregon-Washington game. And but boy, oh boy, it's a really tough call. Really, really tough call. But if this was the situation, I would have Michigan 1, Florida State 2, Alabama 3, and Texas 4. And now a lot of you are thinking, well, you're an Alabama homer. You just want Texas because they beat them. I think that's probably the most quality win this year in this situation, besides Alabama beating Georgia. And that's why I would have Alabama jump Texas and be at 3. But I would be fine if Alabama just makes it as a fan. And I would be fine if they played Michigan in the first round. And I could see Michigan winning that game. And I could see Florida State beating Texas. But I just think Quinn Ewers is good. I think Sark's good. I think that Texas team has a lot of athletes. They have the ability to open the top up. And, yeah, so that would be my take on that crazy situation. But, again, that's just speculation, and that's not getting to watch those games play out. If Oregon absolutely boat raced Washington and if Texas struggled with Oklahoma State, that would change my mind. If Georgia played Alabama really tight and that was a last-second field goal or two-point conversion or whatever, that could play into it. So there's a lot of factors here that could play into what the Final Four teams will be. And at the end of the day, because it's not a 12-team playoff yet, it's going to be up to this committee to see what happens. All right, let's close this episode with a bunch of shout-outs. I'm going to rattle through these quick because I don't want this episode to be too long. So here goes the shout-outs. Number one shout-out, and this might be the coolest thing I've seen all week. Shout-out to Utah State QB Levi Williams. Levi Williams just had 5 touchdowns this past weekend on a huge win over New Mexico to make sure that Utah State got bowl eligibility. And he came out with this announcement this week. Not that he's going to the draft. Not that he's coming back for another year at Utah State. But that he will be foregoing his senior year to enter Navy SEALs training. Shout out to my man, Levi Williams. Thank you in advance for your service. We know that's not a guarantee. You got to get through buds and all that training. But, man, tons of respect for Levi Williams. Next shout out is to the Hogs. Arkansas. Bobby Petrino is back as the offensive coordinator at Arkansas. Enough said there. That is absolutely wild. I want to give a shout out, a couple social media shout outs, some funny things that I saw. A shout out to this Florida State fan who was blowing his leaf blower inside while the Florida kicker was attempting a field goal, and it actually missed to the side that he was blowing the leaf blower, and they just had an absolute celebration. So shout out to that fan from Florida State. And if you want to see that video, it's posted by Saturday Down South on Instagram. Here's another interesting thing, okay? A real interesting, unique situation. And this is the Oregon State and Washington State ownership of the Pac-12. They are going to have Pac-12 eligibility for the next 2 seasons. They're allowed to compete as a 2-team conference for 2024 and the 2025 seasons. Now, I saw a really cool post, and I want to give a shout-out and highlight this post that lays out the options that these 2 teams have moving forward as a conference. Now, option number 1 is pretty straightforward. They can just maintain status as a 2-team conference and play it out. And they could create a scheduling partnership with another conference, or they could just kind of operate as a team that doesn't have a conference. So like a Notre Dame, and they could just fill their schedules however they please, and also just play each other as their conference matchup. They could, their second option is to add new members to the pack and try to rebuild the pack. And if they do that, that would change my opinion on the playoff, on the 4 teams that automatically make it in. And it could. I won't say it will. It could. The other thing is that they could merge with another conference. And the likely conference that would happen with would be the Mountain West because of geography. But again, nowadays, geography doesn't seem to matter for conferences. So those are some of the options. And shout out to Front Office Sports on Instagram. That is one of my favorite accounts. If you're a sports fan, if you like hearing about some interesting things, if you like seeing facilities or complexes or the finances of things or what goes behind programs, Front Office Sports is a really fun follow on Instagram. So shout out to them. Shout out to the kid who willingly offered Pat McAfee to shave his head if he missed the field goal, if he gave him a chance. Kid brought the energy and owned it and got his head shaved on live TV. That was insane. Shout out to the Alungalele. I'm going to botch that pronunciation. Maybe I got it right. The Alungalele brothers. They played against each other this past weekend as Oregon and Oregon State. matched up. Mateo Lungalele is an edge rusher for Oregon, and DJ Lungalele, of course, is the quarterback for Oregon State. So shout out to the brothers getting to play against each other. That was crazy. Another thing to think about, Luke Fickell had this quote. He said, "Is this still college football? I don't know. I'm not sure it was meant to be 6 years, 7 years." Luke Fickell, clearly not a fan of seventh-year seniors. And Grant and I mentioned it earlier, Cam Rising announced that he's coming back for another year. At some point, this is just getting a little out of hand, a little out of control. Big shout out to the kicker at Washington, drilled the game winner, Grady Ross, and afterwards, Coach Kalen DeBoer, who's doing a phenomenal job out there. Kalen DeBoer has built a great program. They're carrying the second longest winning streak heading into this conference championship weekend. And I think people are just assuming that Oregon is going to win that game. I hope that it's a good game. I think Oregon will win, but we can't just count Washington out. They've won a lot of close games this year, and they got a talented team. But this shout-out was to Grady Ross, the kicker, who earned himself a scholarship after the game. Coach DeBoer surprised him, and that was crazy. Another shout-out, Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler. Their reaction in the booth, just seeing them as pure college football fans to the ending of the Alabama-Auburn game with the 4th and 31 throw was absolutely crazy. That was nuts. And shout-out to all those Auburn fans that are getting put on social media for just bawling their eyes out and crying. I'm just kidding. Not a shout-out to y'all. That's tough. That's an absolute disaster to lose that game. A lot of people have already mentioned it. I won't belabor the fact. Why did they only rush two? Why was there a QB spy on that play? I don't know, but that is very tough. Shout out to Ole Miss and Jackson Dart getting their boy back for another year. Jackson Dart announced he is returning for another season at Ole Miss. Another shout out to Quinn Ewers. And if you missed this part earlier, go back and listen to Grant's and I discuss, would Arch Manning transfer now that Quinn Ewers is going back for another season? So shout out to those guys. And a huge shout-out to Tuilagi Tagovailoa, who very quietly, I have hardly heard anyone talk about this, became the Big Ten's all-time passing leader. He passed Curtis Painter's career mark of 11,163 yards this past weekend. Shout-out to Tuilagi. He did that very quietly. And, man, he's done a good job over there. And Coach Loxley has done a really good job building a Maryland program that was a bottom-tier team, again, kind of like Mark Stoops, a bottom-tier team in the Big Ten, and I know they switched conferences recently, but they were always at the bottom, and now they're a mid-tier, mid-to-above-average-tier team in the Big Ten. Of course, a lot of that could change next year, but yeah, they've done a great job. Mike Loxley hasn't had a sub-500 year since he's been there. A big shout-out to an absolute Florida legend. I thought that they might win because of this, too. Tim Tebow, and I heard he gave some pregame speeches as well. Being inducted to the Florida Gators Hall of Fame in the Swamp, got presented to it by Steve Spurrier. I thought that was really cool. A guy that really deserves it. An absolute college football legend. So shout out to Tim. I want to give a huge shout out, with it being Thanksgiving and a lot of people without meals for themselves. I want to give a huge shout out to Michigan's Blake Corum, Alabama's Dallas Turner, and several other players that I probably missed for providing turkeys and meals for those in need this Thanksgiving. I always love seeing stuff like that. All right, I really hope you enjoyed those shout-outs. These episodes, now that we are out of the regular season, may come at different times. Obviously, this is our preview for Conference Championship Weekend. We'll have a special episode and hopefully try to squeeze one in before the College Football Playoff announces their Final Four. That's going to be tight. No promises there, no guarantees. But I want to say thank you guys for an incredible season on the LCFP. Hopefully, we're going to have a couple other special episodes, one featuring a former college football and NFL legend. I'm not going to say his name because we are hoping that the audio works and we can get that edited and out there as a special episode. But all that to say, the coaching carousel has begun. The transfer portal has begun. Bowl season will be upon us soon. So I am not exactly sure how frequently or how often we will be putting out new episodes. This is my first year doing this, but bear with me as we do so. Going to try to have some good guests on, get some different takes on these new coaching hires, on these people hitting the transfer portal and announcing commitments, and also on these bowl games. And of course, we will definitely do some college football playoff predictions and semifinal look ahead and evaluations of the matchups. And of course, we'll do our own takes on if the committee even got the correct four teams in there. So there's a lot to look forward to, a lot to look ahead on. And here's my closing thought for you. I know you heard Grant and I talk a little bit about the Heisman. But here's what I want to point out. This incredible stat. Jaden Daniels is the fifth player in SEC history to account for 50 touchdowns in a season. You want to know the other four? They were all Heismans. Bryce Young, Joe Burrow, Cam Newton, and Tim Tebow. He's also the only player, the first player, since Johnny Manziel to pass for 2,500 yards and rush for 1,000 yards in a season. Jaden Daniels, in my opinion, is the runaway favorite for Heisman. And if anybody else gets it, I think it's a disgrace. Well, there it is, people. Hope you enjoyed this edition of the LCFP. Enjoy these conference championship games. Pulling for your team. Hope they do well. And enjoy it. And we will see the absolute madness that is to come. Y'all enjoy. Laners out.